Parshas Matte. We find in this week Parsha Matte in Parag Lamed Aleph, Pasuk Dalet, that Klal Yisrael are instructed to go and wage war and to seek vengeance of Midian. And Torah writes in Parag Lamed Aleph, Pasuk Dalet, Elef Lamata, L'Choyel Matte Yisrael. 1,000 for every tribe, and the Torah repeats it again, Elef Lamata, 1,000 for every tribe, L'Choyel Matte Yisrael, for every tribe in Klal Yisrael. So it's interesting, when the Torah writes Elef Lamata, Elef Lamata, and the Torah repeats that phrase, it sounds like 2,000 go from every tribe, which would mean 2,000 times 12 is 24,000, which the Baal HaTurim says is exactly Kenega, the 24,000 people who died in the plague that was brought about by Midian in the first place. But either way, Rashi comments on the words L'Choyel Matos Yisrael. Elef Lamate, Elef Lamate, L'Choyel Matos Yisrael. For all the tribes. What does that mean, for all the tribes? So Rashi says, L'Rabbi Shevet Levi. Including Levi, as we know that Levi for the most part were not included in the minion of the Shvatim. Over here, the rabbis Shevet Levi, that Shevet Levi get included as well. If that's the case, L'choira, it would turn out that actually 13 tribes sent soldiers to battle, and yet the next pasuk says, Vayimostru me'alfe Yisrael. Elef lamata, 1,000 were delivered from every tribe. Shneim osor elef chalutzei tzora, which makes 12,000 altogether. Now this is a big difficulty. Because if Shevet Levi sent 1,000 as well, then instead of 12,000, l'chayre should have been 13,000. So something doesn't quite add up over here. How can you on the one hand say that Levi sent 1,000 as well, and then arrive at the total of 12,000? Levi, as it were, are the 13th tribe. Because we know Manasseh and Ephraim are two, so you have 12 anyway, plus Levi should be 13,000. So some are not so bothered by this question, because the Mizrahi, for example, says that Ephraim and Manasseh were only separate tribes with regard to Inyone Eretz Yisrael. So for example, when it talks about taking an inheritance, a land in Eretz Yisrael, we know that Ephraim took their portion and Manasseh took their portion. So with regard to Inyonim of Eretz Yisrael, they are indeed considered two separate tribes. But for all other matters, they are considered one single tribe, and they're called Shevet Yosef. So therefore the question is really a non-starter, because this is not in Yoni Eretz Yisrael, and there really are 12 tribes altogether, including Levi, and that's why 12,000 went. Now, this Teretz of the Mizrahi needs a bit of an explanation, because I saw in one of the Mefarshim called the Be'er Basodeh, he said, one second, if you turn the clock back to Parashas Nosi, it says there, every Shevet sent their Nosi to the Mishkan, in the whole consecration of the Mishkan. And we find there that Manasseh and Ephraim are represented separately. So how can you tell me that Manasseh and Ephraim are considered one tribe outside of Eretz Yisrael, and it's only with regard to Inyoni Eretz Yisrael that they're considered separate, when here they were in the Midbar, not yet in Eretz Yisrael, represented separately for purposes of the Chanukah HaMishkan? So he therefore learned completely different, and he said, it's true that Shevet Levi were sent as well, but they were not sent as soldiers. They were sent to daven on behalf of Klal Yisrael. So when Torah writes that 12,000 soldiers went, that's true. There were 13,000 altogether, of whom 12,000 were soldiers, 1,000 were Shevet Levi to daven. There is, however, the most wonderful Teretz, which I saw firstly in the Bar Tanura. The Bar Tanura, as we know, is famous for his Pirush on the Mishnayos, but he has a sefer, a small sefer al HaTorah, called Amar Nekei, and he writes it there briefly, And I also once heard this in the name of the Gera Rebbe, the Imre Emes. The Imre Emes, the Gera Rebbe who arrived here in Eretz Yisrael just after the war. And he said the most phenomenal pshat. Let's read the Pasuk again. Vayimosru, in Pasuk Hei, Vayimosru me'alfe Yisrael elef lamatesh neim osor olef. How do you translate that word, Vayimosru? Vayimosru means, and they were delivered. They were forcibly handed over. It sounds like they didn't really want to go. Vayimosru, they had to be handed over, otherwise it would have simply said, Vayelchu. And off they went. Doesn't say that. It says Vayimosru, they had to be delivered. So the indication is that they didn't really want to go. Says Rashi, indeed, they didn't want to go. Why would they not want to go? After all, they're seeking the vengeance of Klal Yisrael, revenge against Midian. Why would they not want to go? Says Rashi, because the Torah writes that once you fight against Midian, the battle will be completed, and then it says, following which, Moshe Rabbeinu will die. This is going to be the catalyst, as it were, for Moshe Rabbeinu's death. They had no interest, therefore, essentially, to go and wage war, knowing full well that this would precipitate Moshe Rabbeinu's death. Therefore, by Yimosru, they had to be forced, handedly, had to be forced to go and wage war, because they didn't really want to go, because they knew that Moshe Rabbeinu's death was contingent on them going to battle. There's the Bar Tanura and the Imre'emes. One second. There is one tribe who are the exception to this. You know who they are? Shevet Levi. Because in Parashas Ki Tisa, if you remember, after the Egel, what did Moshe Rabbeinu say? Anybody who served the Egel has to be killed. Not an easy thing to do, because what happens if your father or your mother or your brother or one of the idol worshippers? And who joined Moshe Rabbeinu? Shevet Levi. What does it say in Parshas Vezeis HaBrocha? Ha'oimer la'oviv lo'hikir ves imoy ves bonov lo'yoda. Which is the nation that said, that's it, I don't care less, even if it's my father or my mother or my brother or my sister, I'm not going to let feelings get the better of me, as it were, my emotions. If Moshe Rabbeinu says, step forth and kill anybody who served the Egel, then this is what we have to do. It's not nice, and it's not pleasant, and it's not gishmak. This is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants, this is what we do. Therefore, Shevet Levi, it's true they knew, just like everybody else knew, that Moshe Rabbeinu's death was contingent on this milchama. But whilst the rest of Klal Yisrael, therefore, as it were, let their emotions get the better of them, and that's why they never wanted to go, here stepped up Shevet Levi, and what do they say? It's true, Moshe Rabbeinu's death is contingent, we're going anyway, because we're here to Makan the Rotsan of Hashem. There's the Bar Tanura, if that's the case, the Pasuk is absolutely wonderful. How many soldiers went altogether? Of course 13,000 soldiers went altogether. So what was our question? Yeah, but the Torah says only 12,000 went. It's not true. It doesn't say that. It says Vayimosru 12,000. 12,000 had to be forced. 13,000 went altogether. That's the Imre Emes' Goinus of the Torah, which, as I mentioned, I found in the writings of the Bar Tanura as well. The Shevet Levi indeed are a separate tribe. And that brings the tally to 13,000 altogether. But Vayimosru, how many had to be forcibly handed over against their wishes? 12,000. Because the last 1,000, meaning Shevet Levi, they went quite happily. That's the Ratzon of Hashem, we'll go whatever. Now I heard this year from Avraham Fisher, he told me a very interesting addition to this. Because the Das Bakanin in Parshas Ki Tisa says that Shevet Levi were in fact very korov, very dovuk, very attached to Moshe Rabbeinu. After all, Moshe Rabbeinu was indeed a Levi. In other words, you might be excused for thinking, the cynic might say, one second, if they went happily, maybe they went happily because they didn't quite like Moshe Rabbeinu. So they were more than happy for him to go to war, knowing that would bring about Moshe Rabbeinu's death, and that would be the end of him. Chas v'shalom. But if the Das that came and tells us that no, they were very courageous to Moshe, so what do you see? That is the greatest proof that despite the fact they felt very close to Moshe Rabbeinu, they nonetheless didn't let their emotions get the better of them. And he told me, Rav Fisher, also a tremendous addition as well. I think we all know the famous story, the Gemara in Erevin tells us that there was a Amora of Praga who had a Talmud whom he taught 400 times. 400 times. And a Baskel emerged from Shemaim and said, as your reward for having taught your Talmud 400 times, what how would you like? And he was given a choice, Olam Habo, and in the end he got long life. He was Zeichet to Arichas Yom. Why? Because he taught his Talmud 400 times. But the question is that the Gemara in Megillah says that they asked Rav Preda, what did you do to be Zeicha to long life? Bameh herachta yomim. What were you, how were you Zeicha to arichas yomim? So what should he have answered? Because I taught my Talmud 400 times. Doesn't say that. It says, you know what I was Zeicha to? Because nobody ever preceded me to the Beis HaMedrash. I was the first one there. It says, in all my life, lo kodmani, nobody ever got there first. I was always the first one in the Beis HaMedrash. So Tosfos asks, 1 second, we have a stira on our hands. Why was he zeicha to arichas yomim? Is it because he taught his Talmud 400 times? Or is it because he was the first one in the Beis HaMedrash? So Tosfos says a very cryptic answer. He says, ho v'ho gormule. Literally translated, it was both this and also that brought about the arichas yomim. So it sounds like on the surface that what is Tosfos saying? That it was the two together, a bit of this and a bit of that. In fact, he needed for some reason two zechuyos to merit him arichas yomim. So number one, zechus number one was the fact that he taught his Talmud 400 times. And zechus number two, where he's always the first one in the base of Medrash, ha baha gormu. So he told me, Rabbi Fisher, no, that's not the pshat. Tell me a gewaldiger pshat. He says, you know what the pshat is? He taught his Talmud 400 times. 400 times? Rav Preda taught his Talmud 400 times. You know what you're thinking? You're thinking to yourself, well, obviously, what's so great about that? Maybe, you know, he's a man who's got a lot of time on his hands. So obviously, he takes life casually, very leisurely. There's a lot of spare time on his hands. But no, because the Gemara says that he was always the first one in the Beis HaMedrash. So here's a man in a rush. Ah. So 1 second, if he's always the first one in the Beis HaMedrash, why should he get tzchar? Maybe he's just a nervous type, he's always in a big rush. No, because he taught his Talmud 400 times, and then he forgot he taught him another 400 times. So that's what Tosfos means. Ha v'ha gol mulei, show me that what? Each one of these two episodes complements the other. If we were to ask ourselves, so let's decide, what was Rav Preda? Was he a very slow, casual, leisurely person, or was he a man in a rush? What's the answer? Whatever the Ratzon Hashem was, that's what he was. If the call of the hour was to be patient and leisurely, he sat with his Talmud and taught him 400 times. And if Ratzon Hashem required him to be in a rush, be the first one to the Beis HaMedrash, then he was there. That's what Tosfos means. It's not that he needed two zechusim. Rather, each story proves that Rav Preda was mechavel l'shem shemayim, not because that was his nature, he was in a rush, or because he was a slow person, he was neither. Do you know what he was? He was a person who does Ratzon Hashem. So if you want to know, so what was Shevet Levi? Were they for Moshe Rabbeinu? Were they against Moshe Rabbeinu? The answer is they were for Ratzon Hashem. That's what they were for. And if Ratzon Hashem dictated over here that what? That they go to war, albeit that Moshe Rabbeinu's death is going to be brought about as a result, then that's Ratzon Hashem, and that's the end of the day. So there's no Bayi Mostra on Shevet Levi. They were close to Moshe, they were not close to Moshe, they were close to the Rabbeinu Shlom. Whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu told them to do, that's what they did. In a very similar vein, The Ritva there in Megillah seems to have a different text than the Gemara. They asked Rabbi Loza ben Shamua, tell me, what was it that merited you Arichas Yomim? Do you know what he says? He says, firstly, nobody ever got to the Beis HaMedrash first. Like we mentioned before, I was the first one there. And also, I never did a kapandria in the Beis HaKnesset. What's a kapandria? Shortcut. So I walk through from one side of the street to the other, go via the shul, that's also through. So he said, I never did that. I never make a shortcut through the Beis HaKnesset, I was always the first one in shul. If anyone told me again, it's the same you say. These two complement each other. If you were always the first person in the Beis HaMedrash, well, maybe you were just a man in a rush. No, because you see that when it came to taking the shortcut, I took the long way around. It wasn't such a rush. Well, maybe you're a very leisurely person and you were happy to amble round, you know, in a slow manner around the shul. No, he was the first one there in shul. So what was he? Was he slow? Was he quick? The answer is he wasn't slow, he wasn't quick, he wasn't anything. He did Ratzon Hashem. If the Ratzon Hashem says, get straight into the Beis HaMedrash, he was the first one there. And if the Ratzon Hashem says, no, don't go into the Beis HaMedrash, rather take the long way around, then that's what he did. In other words, the gadlus of Shevet Levi and Rav Preda and these Tanoim were, they never let their feelings and their nature, as it were, get the better of them. Close to Moshe, I don't feel close to Moshe. I'm a man in a rush, I'm not in a rush. I do want to get into shul, I don't want... Whatever the Shulchan Aruch says, whatever the Ratzon Hashem is, that's what I do. So that is a very beautiful chart in this pasuk. Shevet Levi indeed sent 1,000 people to Klali to the war, it's true. So why does the Torah say only 12,000 went? The answer is it doesn't say that. 13,000 went, but 12,000 were Vayimostri. 12,000 had to be forcibly handed over, because the last and 13,000, i.e. Shevet Levi, they went more than happily. Why? They were happy to see Moshe Rabbeinu being killed, chas v'shalom. Happy to bring about Moshe Rabbeinu's death? No, they were happy to carry the Ratzon Hashem. Because whatever the Ratzon Hashem is, that's where they were. We have, just now, a few minutes ago, begun the Tkufa of the 9 days. We're just a few minutes, an hour into the Tkufa of the 9 days. As we know, the Tkufa of Bein HaMetzorim, the 3 weeks, is a step-up process. We have the period of the 3 weeks, and then we have the 9 days, and then we have what's called the Shavua Shechalvoi, the week in which Tisha B'Av is Chal. In parentheses, there's a discussion whether that applies this year or not, because Tisha B'Av is on Shabbos. Then we have certain halachas that apply only on Erev Tisha B'Av, and then on Tisha B'Av itself. It's a whole process. So we all are asking the questions, fine, so what can we do in the 9 days? So we can't take a haircut, and we can't wash our clothes, we can't have boss of the yayin, and we can't wear clean clothes, and we can't buy clothes. So on the surface, one way of looking at this is, and unfortunately we perhaps need to ask ourselves, are we guilty of this? Is that we look at this basically a period of 9 days in which there's a lot of don'ts, a lot of things that are offer. And we can't wait to somehow get through and get over with Tisha B'Av and then put that behind us, and then we can get on with the summer vacation. But we just have to deal with this difficulty called the 9 days, where Chazal came and made our lives miserable for 9 days. Shlomo Zalman Auerbach once commented, he says, I don't receive so many shailas, he says, when somebody, Rahmana Litzlan, is sitting shiva. On a parent, for example, I don't receive that many shailas from them as I do during the 9 days, even though a lot of the halachas are similar. Is it mutter? I know it's not exactly called washing, and it's not exactly cleaning, and then maybe they can find me a heter to wear fresh clothes, and it's not really called listening to music, and then I've got a swimming class which I can't really avoid. And he says, I don't get those shivas and funny sipping shiva. The cycler once walked into a Beis HaMedrash and he saw two young yeshiva bachrim who had just entered yeshiva learning the chavrusa together. And he drew close and he overhears the two of them. Obviously they were relatively new to Gemara and Gemara learning, but they wanted to learn in a, you know, yeshivish fashion. At least it should sound that way. So one of them opens the Gemara and says, yeah, fine. So the Mishnah says, it's Asa, and it's Asa. So if it's Asa, why is it Asa? And the other one says, yeah, because the Issa and the Issa, and that's all the cycle heard was Asa, Issa, Asa, Asa, Issa, Asa. And he got very upset. Not with them, but with those who are mechanech them. That's what you're relaying to your Talmidim. So what's Gemara learning about? Just all the list of, you know, how you must avoid getting in trouble with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This asa, and that's asa, and that's asa, and this, everything's just asa. Everything's just asa. Let me share with you the most wonderful vort that I once heard when I was in Gateshead from Rav Miller, Rav Mordechai Miller, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, who for many, many years was the head of the Gateshead Girls Seminary, one of the prime Talmidim of Rav Dessler, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, but he used to give shurim, Rav Miller, to the boys, to us in yeshiva on occasion. And he once said the following, most magnificent verse. Ruth wants to join Klal Yisrael. She wants to convert. And Naomi tries to dissuade her. As we know from here, we learn that when somebody wants to join Klal Yisrael, become a ger or a gieris, we don't encourage it. To the contrary, we try and dissuade them, because we need to ascertain whether they're really serious about it. And quite clearly, Rus was. So Naomi tells her, you know, it's not easy being a Jew. There's this, and there's that, and the other, she's no undetermined. And the pasuk says that Rus says to Naomi, Ki el asher teilchi eilech, wherever you go, I'll go. Ki asher tolini olin, wherever you lodge, I'll lodge. Ameich Ami, your nation is mine, your God is mine. Every word in that pasuk, say Chazal, is a remez to a different halacha. Which halacha? The Chazal say the following. Naomi says to Ruth, listen, you want to join Klal Yisrael? Not poshut. Not simple. You know, you can't just walk about wherever you like. What do you mean, why? You don't have to walk? Well, there's halachas, for example, on Shabbos called Tchumim. You can't just walk, it's not free will. There's tchumim, there's places you're not allowed to walk. So what does she say? Wherever you walk, I walk. Okay? Says Naomi, you know something? If you become a Jew, you can't necessarily dwell and lodge wherever you like. There's some places you won't be allowed to sleep. Why not? There are occasions, halachas of yichud, for example. Can't just lodge wherever you like. Fine, I'll take that. Ki asher tolini olin. Wherever you dwell, I'll dwell. You know, if you join our nation, not every service of Avodah Zarah is Musa either, Chas v'Shalom. Don't worry, Ameich Ami. One halacha, but she was determined. Asked Rav Mela, the most gewaldige kasha. If Naomi tells her, do you know something? There's some places he's not allowed to walk. Because there's tchumin. What should Ruth have responded? Ki el asher loy teilchi loy eilech. Wherever you don't go, that's where I won't go. You know, there's some places you're not allowed to lodge. Fine, so wherever you don't lodge, I won't lodge. Why did she express this in the positive? Wherever you go, I will go. I never mentioned anything about going. I mentioned about where you can't go. Wherever you lodge, I'll lodge. I never spoke about where you can lodge. I spoke about where you can't lodge. So why did she express it in the positive? Why didn't she say, wherever you don't go, I won't go. Wherever you don't dwell, I won't dwell. Whatever you don't serve, I don't serve. After all, that's what Naomi told her. Said Rav Miller, the most wonderful, wonderful parents. Because Ruth wanted to show Naomi that she understood very, very well that the Torah is not a list of do's and don'ts. This is asa, and that's asa, and this is a restriction, and this is asa, and this is another boundary, and another gemara, and another prohibition, and it's all don't, asa, 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 asa. In his words, I couldn't put it better than Rav Miller himself, he said, she wanted to demonstrate that she understood that these are not restrictions, but rather they are refinements of character. So she deliberately mentioned it in the positive, because had she said it in the negative, what the connotation would have been then? Ah, there's somewhere else you can't do. You can't go here. I won't go there. One second, we're not done yet. You can't sleep over there. Fine, I won't sleep there. Yeah, but you can't do it. I won't do that. No, another is there. Come on, lay it on. She deliberately mentioned it in the positive to express that understanding and recognition that I understand these are not just a list of do's and don'ts. Each halacha is there to be maroiming us. So too, when it comes to the 9 days, for example, you know, I gave a few shurim this week to men, to ladies, about the halachas of the 9 days. The feeling as I came into the room is almost, all right, come on, let's have it. I'm ready for this. Come on, let's say how many things are asa. We can't do this, we can't do that. No, I'm ready to take it. No! Then you're answering not like Ruth. Then we're just viewing the 9 days as a kufa of restriction. That's what Chazal wanted us, just to have a really miserable week and a half. That's not the purpose of the Tisha, of the 9 days of the Bein HaMetzarim. What is the purpose? What is the purpose? We have mentioned many, many times that during the course of our calendar year, we have a bunch of stations which we call the Yomim Tovim and the Mayadim. And each Yom Tov has its Avodah. Each Yom Tov has its Avodah, what it is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from us. When we come to the Yom Tov of Pesach, it's all about Emunah and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When we come to the Yom Tov of Shavuot, it's all about Torah, Sukkot, Simcha, Purim, Ashkacha Pratis, Bein HaMetzarim, obviously, Churban and Tisha B'Av. But we can sometimes get lost. No, how was your Pesach? Oh, it was wonderful, wonderful Yom Tov. What was wonderful about it? Well, we did some magnificent Tziolim and Chol HaMoed, and the matzah was so crunchy this year, and that's what you got from Pesach. You know, I want that from Aaron Feldman, Shlita the Rav's father-in-law. He said that he once saw an advertisement just before Shavuos in one of the Jewish magazines. If you think that Shavuos is all about cheesecake, then you're very much mistaken. That was the big heading at the top of the advert. If you think that Shavuos is all about cheesecake, then you're very much mistaken. So he said, Rav Feldman said, when he saw that, he thought to himself, oh, Baruch Hashem. Finally, somebody is here to teach people, you know, that Shavuos is not just about cheesecake, you know. He said, until you continue the advert, and it said, if you think that Shavuos is just about cheesecake, how mistaken you are, because it's about quiche and pasta and pizza and all wonderful milchik delights. That's what Shavuos is about. That's what Chazal wanted from us. How was Sukkot? Oh, it was wonderful. We danced and Simchas Yotzeiv, and the music was magnificent, a seven-piece band. What is it that Chazal wanted from us and the Torah wanted from us? Every single Yom Tov has its Avodah. But if you look in the Torah, we notice something very interesting. The Shalosh Regalim, for example, is called the Chag HaOsif, Sukkot, and the Chag HaKotzer. Why? Because that's the time of year that you reap or you gather your produce in the field. And many of the Mefarshim ask the obvious question, one second, it's true that's what's going on in the fields, but what's that got to do with the Yom Tov? That's what's happening to occur in the Yom Tov. Why is that sum up the essence of Yom Tov? So we've mentioned in the past, in this shir, that at least with Erech Remez, imagine somebody would wake up one day morning after Pesach. Summer has arrived. I'm here to do my ktsira. I want to now reap all the produce in the field. One second. during the winter months when it was cold and difficult, did you plough the land and sow the land and plant all? No, I missed that bit out, but I want to do a ksira now. What exactly are you going to harvest? Where were you during the winter? Where was all your preparation? You come to Sukkot, that's it, Sukkot, Ha'osif, I want to do the Asifa. What are you going to collect? Did you do the preparatory stage? And I decided to miss out that bit. If you didn't prepare, then there's no Asifa. Every Yom Tov is exactly the same. You cannot fall into Pesach, or fall into Shavuos, or fall into Sukkot. Every Yom Tov, without exception, has a period of Hachana. Pesach, all the way back from Purim, generates the Simcha and the atmosphere of Geula. Shavuos has the entire period of the Sfirat HaOmer. Sukkot has the entire period of the Yom Neroyim. The Yom Neroyim themselves have a period of Elul. Tisha B'Av, which is a week and a half away, has the period of the Bein HaMetzarim and the 9 days. The more important the Yom Tov or the Moed, the more of a preparation it needs. The London contingent will know and will have seen, maybe others too. If you ever go, for example, to visit Buckingham Palace, and one of the first things you notice is you can't get anywhere near the palace. You have to stand behind these very big black gates, and there's an enormous forecourt until you can just about see the front door of the palace. You can't yourself get anywhere near the front door of the palace. The more chashuv the mokrim is, the more of a hachana it needs. The Queen's front door can't just be off the street. You don't just drop into the palace, there's a whole forecourt. Our front door could be on the street, you could just fall into our houses. But the place, the base, Melech, or the Malka, you don't just drop in. It's Lahavdil Elef Havdolis. When we meet, as it were, the Ribbono Shel Olam on every Yom Tov, we don't just drop in. There's a forecourt. There's a period of Achana. And the period of Achana is what generates the atmosphere that is necessary in order really to be Mekayim, the Avodah of that Chag, or that Moed, or that fast, whatever it may well be. That's why the Yom Tovim are compared to Asifa and Ksira, because they necessarily require a period of Achana. How long for? The bigger the day, or the bigger the Yom Tov, the more of Achana it needs. And therefore, rather than looking at the halachas of the 9 days, it's just a long list of restrictions and prohibitions, and just, we just have to lead a miserable life for a week and a half. No. Understand the halachas of the 9 days, like Ruth understood what the Torah is all about. The greatest chesed that Chazal did for us was that they created these halachas for us in order to generate the atmosphere which is necessary to be the lead up to Tisha B'Av. Can you imagine if there wouldn't be the halachas of the 9 days? Imagine, and you'd be sitting on Erev Tisha B'Av half an hour before Shkia, the music's blaring, you're eating Suda Shlema HaMelech B'Shaitoi Bosor V'Yayin with your freshly laundered clothes, you just shaved, had a haircut, had a shower. Oh, 1 second, it's Ben Ashmoshes. Okay, shoes off, Tisha B'Av. How on earth would it be possible? It would be impossible. It would be impossible to tap in to the Avodah of Tisha B'Av, which is about Tzar and Churban and Golus and Shechina and Kedusha and Beis HaMikdash. Who's thinking about the Beis HaMikdash? Who's thinking about Tzar and Avelos in the middle of my wine and meat steak barbecue party half an hour before Tisha B'Av? So Chazal B'Roiv Chochmosom or B'Roiv Chastom, they helped us. They helped us. They helped us gather and create this atmosphere in the lead up to Tisha B'Av, so that when Tisha B'Av finally arrives, we're in the right frame of mind. We're mentally and physically and emotionally prepared to be involved in the Avodah of the day of Tisha B'Av, which is in fact called by Chazal a Moed. We don't create Tachanun on Tisha B'Av. Because just like a Moed of Simcha is a day that we meet the Ribbono Shel Olam, on Tisha B'Av you can meet the Ribbono Shel Olam as well. Perhaps not through Simcha, through sadness, but Moed means a meeting. The Oyel Moed is the tent of meeting. You meet the Rabbeinu Shoyim. You can have, as it were, Moyadim B'Simcha, and you have a Moed of Avelos. Well, how does that work? What do I do? If that question is only asked on Tisha B'Av night or on Tisha B'Av afternoon, the answer is, it's too late. Where were you during the winter and the summer preparing? You cannot now do the Asifa or do the Ksira if you never did the Hachon. So therefore, this is really a perhaps general lesson for us in how we view all areas of Halacha. Halacha is not just a bunch and list of prohibitions and restrictions. Rather, the halachas are there to help us. They are the medium. They are not the tachlis. They are the medium to what? To whichever area of avodah the halachas relate to. But specifically with regard to the Bein HaMetzarim, I can tell you the last few days, the last few hours and minutes, I got a shayla a few minutes ago. Yeah, so my parents want to take me to with me and my whole family to a milchik restaurant tomorrow, make a big party. Is it mutter? Yeah. Mutter. Not everything that's mutter is necessarily the right thing to do. If I want to do exercise, can I have music blaring down my ear? Because I'm not really doing it in order to enjoy it, I'm really doing it more for... Yeah. Mutter. But is that what Chazal exactly want now? When you enter the Bein HaMetzarim, or you enter the 9 days, that's it. Big family party in the restaurant. Okay, it's true, the Shulchan Aruch doesn't say any thief specifically saying it's asur, so therefore I have no right to tell them it's asur. But that's how you're going to generate a Tisha B'Av atmosphere. Major big party in the restaurant. Again, each circumstance obviously has to be discussed and judged in its own merit. But in the last few hours, in the last few minutes just before this year, the phone's been ringing off the hook. Is this mutter? Is this mutter? Is this mutter? Somebody asked me a shayla today about a whole shayla. Yes, is it mutter by the... So I said, it's not clear. Ah, today it's mutter, he said to me. I never said that. I said that there's a discussion. Ah, so you're saying it's mutter. No, I never said that. Again, what are we looking to do? Are we looking to try and dodge the raindrops? Try and avoid getting into trouble? Or are we trying to understand what it is that Chazal wanted from us? Just like Ruth didn't express it in the negative. We understand that not eating bosa or the yayin, and not washing clothes, and not cleaning clothes, and etc., are not a list of restrictions. It therefore really behooves us to spend a few minutes from now till Tisha B'Av, it's every day, every 2 days, whenever a person has time, study the halachas. Even more important, there are so many sforim available nowadays in Hebrew and in English and every language you like that will help us. That will help us generate the right atmosphere as we lead up to the moyed of Tisha B'Av.